This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks very much for listening, both over our terrestrial radio stations or via our podcast on AmericaWeekend.com, or to those of you at the NSA, just needed a break from listening in on phone calls, so you listened in on us instead. Privacy matters have been in the fore over the last few weeks, ever since Edward Snowden broke this story through Glenn Greenwald about the NSA listening in on phone calls and the PRISM program that looks at your emails and your web searches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And privacy issues have been going on for years now, ever since everybody's been online. Every few days, we get a story like the one a few days ago where Facebook revealed that a bug inadvertently exposed the contact information of 6 million of its users via their Download Your Information tool. And there are more and more reports of these sort of things every day. Our next guest says you have to be careful about the telltale trail that your phone leaves behind. Her name is Tracy Ann Cosa. She's a digital privacy expert at the University of Ontario Institute of Technology. Tracy, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks, Paul.
What sort of information am I leaving behind even when I turn my phone off?
Well, it's pretty interesting. It's actually hundreds of pieces of data. And normally when we talk about what's available, people think of my phone number, my name, the information I may send in a text message. But there's all sorts of information that the companies need behind that, like your location, the kind of phone you're using even in some cases, and specifically how long you've been on a certain call or sent a message for. So there's a lot more information available than we have visibility to.
When you say the companies, which companies are you referring to? The AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile?
My research is focused on Canada, so a lot of the telecommunications companies that I look at would be the big ones in Canada, like Bell and Rogers, but it would be the equivalent of those in the States. So AT&T, Verizon, all of the places that provide cellular network services.
Okay, so they're gathering that information, and I think we all assumed they were gathering that information. I think the part that we're worried about is any more nefarious use of the information that's on our phones. What can we do about that, and how much of that is going on?
Actually, let me start by correcting you. It's not so much that they're necessarily gathering information on us. It's that that's actually how the services work. When you talk about the architecture of computers and networks and the way they function, they actually need a lot of that data in order to properly send messages. After all, I don't want my happy birthday mom text message going to my dad or arriving on the wrong day. So these are things that these companies need to provide that service to us. I think the issue where we really see privacy issues kind of pop out is the collection, use, and disclosure of that information beyond what the normal expectations would be. So I expect the cell phone companies to have access to that information because I'm paying them for that service. What happens to it afterward is usually governed by legislation, and that's where it gets a little tricky.
Yeah, and as we're finding, some of that legislation, at least in the United States, has been secret stuff that we haven't been able to know was going on in the first place.
And that's exactly the problem, Paul. And frankly, I think a lot of that's been going back a lot further. In my research as a political scientist, we look a lot at secret courts, and we look at the way secret courts work and legislation in specifically in wartime is passed. And it's very different than the normal day-to-day processes that we would think of. So when you look at how court orders or warrants or all those other kinds of legal processes are executed, the issue becomes under what circumstances is that data available, and have we as a society had a chance to have a real open public discourse about that. And I'm not so sure that that happens a lot when it comes to privacy issues. And I think that's compounded by the fact that we're not always aware just how much data is out there.
Most people, when they hear about these issues, they say, and I've heard them say this to me, look, I don't do anything wrong. Why should I care who's listening or who knows who I'm calling or for how long or from where? What would you say to them?
That's a tough question, and I get that a lot. And when I work in privacy, you tell people you're a privacy expert, and a lot of times the answer is, well, I don't do anything wrong. I have nothing to hide. And I think that discounts a lot of the work that has been done in research fields outside of computer science that really validates the need for privacy just for our own mental health. And that goes way beyond just what's available in our actions on the internet. I mean, we close the door when we go to the bathroom, right?
Yes.
And we wear clothes when we go out in public. There's privacy decisions that we make every day, and it's those decisions that we're trying to figure out how to adapt and replicate on the internet.
What I tell people is, what if there was a law that said every time you leave your house, you have to call some agency and report, I'm leaving my house now and here's where I'm going. Nobody would want that kind of law, but it's actually going on already without you knowing it, right?
Well, actually, I have to tell you, Paul, it's not my area of expertise, but as a privacy person, my two cents on that would be at least there'd be some transparency. At least I would be initiating the call, and at least I would know who it is I'm calling and what I'm telling them.
Okay, what about the privacy, not the government necessarily, but the privacy of the other companies that I'm dealing with on my phone? For instance, my daughter, 19 years old, she's on Facebook all the time, and she's doing it on her phone. And when she's not on Facebook, I have a feeling that Facebook is still following what she's doing on her phone. Are these companies whose apps we're downloading and using, are they also gathering information on us even when we're not using them?
Depends completely on the documents that they publish in, or the instructions and guidelines they publish in their privacy policies. And that's sort of a tricky mechanism for informing people, because I, just like everybody else, have very often just clicked I accept when I'm downloading an app without reading the entire policy.
Right.
And a lot of the times the details of what they're collecting, when they're collecting it, and who they're giving it to is hidden in that policy. And the other issue, of course, with that is if I decide I want to use that app, I'm going to download it anyway. So there's not necessarily a lot of real consent and choice going on.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Most of us just go, okay, this screen, click, 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 click. Okay, can I use this now? Fine.
Exactly.
People may want to just use, you know, Angry Birds or play whatever game it is.
Exactly.
Or whatever is online. I've heard that even things like the flashlight app that you can download for your Android or your iPhone, even that is using a location service inside your phone to know where you're using their app.
Well, it depends on the application, but suffice it to say that wouldn't be the first time I've heard that. And certainly there are applications out there that, you know, not necessarily for nefarious reasons, but because they're written by somebody who just programmed them to work the way that they know how to program applications to work, may collect information that they don't necessarily need to.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. I'm just going to share a little secret with our audience. When we called you, we couldn't get you through your regular name at the hotel you're staying in. We had to use a special code name to get to you. So obviously you're into privacy. Does that mean you don't have a smartphone like this because you're worried about this sort of thing in the real world?
I worry about it a lot, but I also accept that there is some reality to being engaged in technology and to having to work in this field knowledgeably. So I will confess I do have a smartphone. I have some protections on it, and I use virtually no third-party applications on it. So I look for applications that have been developed by companies that I feel at least have some kind of visibility or are high enough profile that it would hurt them if they're not following the privacy legislation in the way they should be.
Well, but we just heard that story about Facebook and accidentally giving out information. I mean, that's a pretty prominent company. Is that a company that you would use or avoid?
Well, for Facebook, I have a Facebook account, but I don't post personal information on it. I use it to primarily look at how Facebook works and to look at what other people post on Facebook so that I can do my job better. But there are other applications that I would use that maybe would have less control over them. You know, things like the flashlight application. I think a lot of people downloaded that with the expectation that it would be providing flashlight services only and
yes,
not necessarily accessing their location or their phone book. So you kind of have to look at what's reasonable.
Yep. Are we past the point here as a public where we have any chance of recovering any of this data, where we're already just giving up so much of our lives and our, what's going on everywhere we go, that we can never get this horse back in the barn?
Oh, that's a tough question, Paul. I never like to say that it's futile, but certainly we're in the middle of a pretty paradigmatic shift. We're looking at more and more of our lives being online. And I think the important part of that is really, well, it's really two things. One, being aware of how much data, not just what we're sending, like in the context of our text messages and emails, but also the way the actual system works and all the other information that's available behind that information that I'm deliberately sending.
Yep.
So I think being aware of that is a really important part. I think the other thing is we have to understand and really have a lot more openness and transparency about what we're using these machines for.
Absolutely. I don't think we have nearly enough of that. Tracy Ann Kosa, digital privacy expert. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're all out of time. Thanks for joining me today here on America Weekend. America.